Hello and welcome to the fourth episode of Polling Matters. My name's Kieran Pedley and I'm delighted to be joined by our first guest, Stephen Bush from The Telegraph. Hello, Stephen.
Hello.
And also my partner in crime, as it were, Leo Barassi.
Our main topic of this week is the rise of marginal polling and what that means for national opinion polls. And we're going to look, first of all, at a poll that ComRes have published this week, which is of Labour and Conservative marginals, which generally has suggested that Labour's ahead. Now, some people, Mehdi Hassan of the Huffington Post among them, have suggested that what we can do is look at these polls above others and say, essentially, let's not worry too much about what's going on in the national polls, because these marginals of the key battlegrounds are what really matters. And actually, what's going on is, if you look at those, it's showing that Labour's really quite far ahead. And in fact, that means that we can just focus on that, and we don't need to worry about the fact that it's pretty much neck and neck at the national level. And to be honest, that kind of makes intuitive sense, because we know that elections are won and lost in a few key battlegrounds. People have been saying it for years. So why do we bother looking at the national polls when we can just be thinking about the locals? What do you think, Stephen?
I understand why people think that, but I think there's this thing with marginal polling where people go, oh, this is a bit special. But what does the marginal polling show? It shows a Labour lead of 8 points. What does the national polling show? It shows that Labour are up 4 points, the Tories are down 4 points. So that is a Labour, that which gets you to the 8-point gap between the two parties. So really what it's saying is, let's have a more expensive way of telling us what we know already, but we'll fetishise it because we can go, oh, look, there's somewhere ting shouth in there. It feels a bit like we've got, oh, gone, here's our new shiny toy.
I think this is part of Britain's obsession with American politics shining through here. It reminds me a lot of Nate Silver in Obama's re-election campaign, and obviously in the past, where, you know, everyone else has said it's very close. He said, no, it's not. Barack Obama's going to be re-elected. If you look at the state-by-state polls, it shows very clearly in the states that matter, Obama's going to win, and he called it right. And what I think some pollsters are trying to do is to do the same thing in Great Britain, but it's much more difficult here. There aren't those key 10 states that are polled extremely regularly where we're able to get that clear picture. I mean, I would have 2 points. One would be that ultimately the marginal polling that's out there, in my opinion, isn't really complete. If we look at the ComRes polls, very, very useful, very sensible approach to take to this, but it is only those 40 seats. You know, if you think that Labour aren't necessarily going to be losing seats to the Conservatives, it's only 25 seats you're looking at, because actually 15 of them are Labour held. Useful, interesting, but as Stephen says, actually, you know, the national picture is reflected there also. And I think furthermore, you see that, you know, actually we haven't seen much, even from Lord Ashcroft, from Scotland in the SNP, which is going to be majorly critical to what's happening at the next election. So those are going to be very, very important.
So what we need then for them to do something more than just be a local equivalent to the national polls is for us essentially to be having lots of polls in lots of constituencies on the level that we don't have at the moment.
The thing about the Obama polling, you have to sort of link it back to that, because I think this is where this comes from, largely. It's this idea that actually it's much easier to call presidential elections in the States if we know what the battleground is saying. Those are much more frequently polled. They're much easier to poll just because of the polling infrastructure that's out in the States that doesn't really quite exist here. So, yeah, ideally what we would have is all of the marginals that matter regularly polled. And obviously we don't have that at the moment, in many cases for very good reason that it's very expensive.
I mean, I'm going to be hugely unfair and uncharitable here and say that I think a lot of the conversation about looking at the marginals is about a group of people on the left who basically want to go, look, I made the right decision in 2010, okay, stop bothering me about it, it's fine. Because everyone now is looking at the national polling going, oh, I'm not sure then that's a good place for Labour to be with 5 months to go. But then people go, oh, but no, the marginal polling is much better, it's fine, I don't have to answer
so
any awkward
questions.
It's
spin, basically.
It's spin. It's spin from, not, well, actually not so much from the Labour Party, but I'd say it's spin from journalists who perhaps, and yeah, I can't talk, I said a year ago that Labour was on course to be elected with probably with a large majority, which is looking increasingly shaky as predictions go. But I do think there's an element of going, oh, we'll look at the marginal polling. But if we polled marginals as regularly as they do in the States, we'd all be going, oh, 8 points is historically not that large, you know, Cameron had a lead of 30 points in the marginals at this point. The only reason why it seems different is we are not marginals literate yet in our political debate. But I think that would only be good for maybe two election cycles, and then suddenly everyone would switch on. So yeah.
I'm going to slightly challenge the view that's being built, because I would say, whilst I completely agree with Stephen's point that the Labour Tory marginals are very much replicating the national swing, if you look at some of the Ashcroft ones, and in particular I'm thinking of the Lib Dem Tory marginals, then you see something very different and potentially very important for the election, which is the massive incumbency effect that the Lib Dems have. And a lot of people talk about incumbency effect as if it's a uniform thing, but it's really not. It seems to be, from the polling and from the way elections have been over the last few cycles, something that's much better for the Lib Dems in particular. And that seems to be picked up from the Ashcroft polls. So his latest Lib Dem-held Tory second marginals had the Lib Dems 9 points ahead at the constituency level. So the question that asks, not how would you vote in the general election, but thinking particularly about your constituency, putting the Lib Dems that far ahead was something that you wouldn't get just from extrapolating from the national polls locally.
I think there's definitely some use for them. I mean, when you look at what's happening at the local level, one of the things that you can't really take into account with the national polls is the ability to vote tactically. And this is something that people have mentioned, that actually, do you know what, keeping the Tories out or keeping Labour out or whatever it might be is going to be, it is a consideration. I know for a fact from my family, you know, that there are people that just don't want the Tories to be in, whether it's locally or nationally. Doesn't matter who they actually vote for, in a way, to an extent at least. So that is much more difficult, obviously, to pick up in a national vote share.
How about UKIP? So we haven't talked about them yet, and that seems to be another point where looking at the local level and looking particularly at the constituencies where they have the potential to swing the vote one way or another is another point where it would be really interesting to see if what's happening is local messaging is effectively... And I'm thinking in particular of seats where it's a Labour-Tory battle, and Tory defectors to UKIP could give Labour the constituency. But can we use marginals? Have we been using marginals to be able to get a grip on how far that's happening?
That was the interesting thing about the Servation Stockton South poll that Unite released, which I feel there may be something slightly interesting with the release of that poll going on. But that showed that actually the UKIP vote seemed to be hurting Labour, because it was breaking up the flow of anti-Tory votes and kind of creating another force. So James Wharton is still slightly ahead of Louise Bowlock there. I think with the UKIP factor, that is where marginal polling can be really useful. The big problem at the moment is we still don't really understand yet enough about what UKIP do in different constituencies. One MP said to me the other day, so this is a Labour MP, she said to me, well, I have a different type of working class voter than insert other MP who's more worried about UKIP here. And her point was her what we think of as a Labour's core were more aspirational, more diverse, and sort of less UKIP-y. Whereas for some, so in some places, I think it will actually help the Conservatives. In more places, it will hurt them. So I think the UKIP factor is another place where the marginal polling is more helpful. But I think these straight Lab Tory battles where we go, oh well, it's 8 points, it's wholly useless.
We've mentioned the SNP a couple of times. Now it's interesting that we haven't seen any useful marginal polling in Scotland. What do we think we can read into that, and should we expect some? What might that tell us?
I think this goes to the heart of the trouble with marginal polling, which is that for it to be genuinely good enough that you can actually model a result off it effectively, you need to have the complete picture. And it's clear that we don't. I mean, one of the major pictures of national politics at the moment is the rise of the SNP in terms of their membership since the referendum. And we simply do not have that yet. Why we don't have that, I don't know. But that is very interesting. I think for national polls, you've got that peer review where, if a poll comes out when the Tories are 3 points ahead or something, but everyone else is showing it still with a 2-point Labour lead, then people can say, actually, do you know what? That could be an outlier, or even if it's a new kid on the block, or I'm not sure about their methodology and how they weight the data and so on. When you've only got limited numbers of people putting out marginal polling, that's much more difficult. So, I mean, and I'm not for a second suggesting that there's anything wrong with what Lord Ashcroft's doing, for example, but in the absence of anybody else doing the same thing, it's very difficult to compare it.
I think that is sort of exactly right. I mean, one of the, without wishing to point any specific fingers, I think that there's a problem in some ways, and a lot of people like me, it's just, they've just discovered polling, go, oh, this great service which exists for me, when of course actually it's, you know, it's an advert, it is, as you say, it's a loss leader. A lot of people don't seem to realise that when the nice people from YouGov or the nice people from ICM do a poll for them, what they are really buying is an advert in The Guardian, The Times, The Telegraph, for, you know, two Tesco's or whatever, to go, look, we called the election. And it is more expensive. It takes a lot more time, so it's even harder. And I know in some ways it would be better if we got rid of this awful, oh, it's the Juncker bounce, you know, or some other improbable event that has no effect on how people vote. But it's longer, it's slower. I think it would actually sort of in some ways send our conversation around polling backwards a bit. I do think there's a problem that, yeah, I'm a bit of an Ashcroft sceptic, in that whenever a politician says, oh, our private polling is better, I go...
Always ignore that.
Yeah, I just go, oh, well, you've got some secret numbers which are better than the...
No one ever says their private polling is worse. Yeah.
Well, that's what actually sort of really was sort of a Lib Dem saying to me when I said, oh, I'm not convinced, and they said, well... Yeah, me neither. That's not what that they said. That is, those are not numbers that I would be as unhappy about. The numbers I've seen from ours, I thought, and they are a bit at variance with everyone else's VIs, which to me suggests that perhaps we should be. I'm not saying that he's making them up, but obviously it's really difficult to poll that many people. He's the first person to do it, so you know, that type of polling hasn't even gone through its 1992 moment, and we've suddenly decided, oh well, this must be sort of the, you know, the gold standard, which I think is a bit iffy.
I have a prediction on that. I suspect that the last marginal, super marginal poll at the general election will be sufficiently before voting day that when the result comes out, things could have changed.
The response will be this was a snapshot, not a prediction.
I mean, it's difficult to time it right so that you're there on the Tuesday before Thursday, I suppose. But there is a separate point here, which I think I bleat on about quite a lot, which is that the polling industry does have a means of actually shaping the political agenda as much as reflecting it. I mean, the obvious example everyone always uses is the YouGov poll during the Scottish referendum. But you know, if we go into an election campaign where, or whether it's the national polls or the marginal polls, are all showing one result or another, that is going to shape the agenda very, very clearly. If Ed Miliband is doing very badly, there's going to be jitters. There's going to be articles saying who's going to be next. If Cameron looks like he's toast, then you know, you might see the UKIP vote even spike as Conservatives think, well, what's the point?
Well, interestingly, of course, they have got, I think, the Nursevation one, which leaked in slightly mysterious circumstances, is the first of a series of marginal polls they're doing with Servation, where there will be a lot of questions like, yeah, what do you think of TTIP? You know, how do you feel about renationalising the railways? Which obviously is, yeah, completely reasonable. The interesting thing is it makes sense for them to get into that space, because whatever happens at the next election, I imagine both the main parties will be disappointed with the result. So I suspect there will be slightly more of large-pocketed people on both sides commissioning marginal polling to kind of start getting their excuses in early, one way or the other.
Well, it's now time for the segment of the podcast when we look at our finding of the week. So, Stephen, over to you. You've been looking at some interesting data. What have you found?
Right, so, yeah, back to Lord Ashcroft, peace be upon him. I thought there was a very interesting question about, you know, parties that people would like to see in a coalition, because I just thought it revealed something quite interesting about his attitude towards parties. So the party that voters would most like to see their in a coalition is the Greens, who 52% would be happy with them in a coalition, 42% unhappy. The Lib Dems, exactly divided opinion, 48 unhappy, 48 happy. Labour voters were, as you'd expect, more enthusiastic than the Tories about coalition with the Greens. But the really interesting thing, I thought, was the way that UKIP and the SNP united all other voters in making voters unhappy about the prospect of them in coalition. 6 in 10 voters would be unhappy to see the Scottish National Party in a coalition. 55% would be unhappy to see the UKIP in a Conservatives. Even among Conservative voters, just 39% were happy to see UKIP in there. no demographic were happy to see the SNP in there, which interestingly was worse than the Plaids, the Unionists, or the SDLP, which has been turned into the last two Irish parties, probably cause for a lot of relief in both Labour and Tory HQ. Which I thought was interesting, because up until that point, I kind of thought that the whole UKIP and the SNP was a nice, slightly elegant sort of commentator's device that I didn't feel quite stacked up, for the incredibly self-centred reason that I have never been asked by an SNP activist, OK, where are you really from? I have been asked that a number of times by UKIP activists, so I'm always a bit reluctant to go, they're the same. But the interesting is, actually, they clearly are, in terms of their ability to unite the bit of the population which likes them and to repulse everyone else. They clearly have got that similar Marmite quality going.
It's like a
on,
them and us thing. And if you're with us, that's great. But the rest of the people that probably have voted for traditional parties, if you can call them that, aren't particularly keen on being told that they're wrong and that they've been lied to all these years.
Yeah, that's really interesting and completely unlike what I would have expected. Sort of throughout the scale, because obviously there's so much talk of the Lib Dems as the traitors and the people that no one like, and yet to see them nearly at the top of the list is surprising. And again, the Green Party is interesting, and I wonder how much that's because people on the right don't really know what they stand for that well, and in a way it's a bit of a product that they're seen as slightly inoffensive.
Well, perhaps with the Lib Dems, people feel they can be moulded in a coalition to whatever the view is of the leading party. Not my view, of course.
Well, I think that is kind of, there's this interesting divide within the Labour Party between people who go, they've got into bed with the Tories, we don't want to go into coalition with them, and the people who go, oh, they've done everything the Tories want, they'd be brilliant coalition partners. I think it's a bit unfair to the Lib Dems in both directions. But I suspect with the Greens, and I'm doing it too now, you know, one Lib Dem said to me very angrily, we need to stop calling them the Greens, we need to call them the Green Party, because we call them after a colour and everyone thinks they're sweet and cuddly and nice. And I think they have kind of inherited that Lib Dem mantle of being the nice, the one who's basically, you know, only one shade more hateable than the comedian on the Question Time panel.
Yeah. Leo, what have you been looking at?
Well, mine is also from Ashcroft, but it's perhaps less of a profound finding. And it's the mistake that he made in his poll of Doncaster North, where, unfortunately for him and unfortunately at the time for the Labour leader, he put Ed Miliband only 14 points up ahead of UKIP, and then corrected that a week later when the mistake was spotted in the weighting. And realised it was in fact 29%, so a vast difference that utterly changed the story from one of Labour leaders in trouble of losing his seat to one of he's utterly safe, there's nothing to see here. And really, the reason it caught my eye wasn't so much about the numbers as about how awful I felt for the poor analyst who must have been looking at the numbers and in amongst the thousands of things that she or he had to do, just pass this through and made the mistake and published it. And then there would have been a moment where they would have got the phone call saying, have a look at those numbers, there's something wrong with it. And you and I, Kieran, we've both done this with data books, and I suspect, Stephen, you've probably been in a similar place, but just that pit of your stomach feeling. And
I've never had any numbers wrong, Leo.
I must be misremembering.
No, it's very true, and I think, you know, it speaks a bit to some of the points we were mentioning earlier about, you know, peer review of marginal polling. If that had not been spotted, I think it was by Anthony Wells at YouGov, wasn't it, that actually sort of clocked it. If that hadn't have been spotted, then that narrative would have been out there. And I guess it does show that idea that polling can shape the agenda. Is Ed Miliband in trouble, even in his own seat? And it even feeds the narrative of maybe people that don't like him being quite unfavourable to his leadership and all the rest of it. But yeah, I mean, you know, as someone that's been there, it's a horrifying moment when you discover you've got something wrong. And to be fair, as I think I tweeted yesterday, fair play to Lord Ashcroft for coming out and, you know, saying, look, hold hands up and no excuses, and here we are, because it can happen to anybody, and it will in the future.
And it's actually probably something positive about how we do polling in this country, that we publish our data, and although he's not a member of the British Polling Council, it's expected that Ashcroft does that as well, and lots of other countries don't, but the fact that he does meant that people could look at the numbers and see what was going on.
I think, you know, irrespective of whether you're a member of the British Polling Council or not, and obviously I would encourage everyone to be that, you know, I don't think anybody can credibly enter the polling space in the UK without publishing their stuff. which obviously Lord Ashcroft does, because you know, just there's that natural cynicism about believing what you read anyway, which I think, Stephen, you probably experience in a slightly different way. You know, we're looking like you've got something to hide, whether it be a political party with private polling that shows something a bit different, or just whoever it might be that has their particular agenda that they're trying to prove. You know, you're not gonna do it unless you're transparent.
No, I think that is exactly right. I think, in an odd way, and obviously it's really good, people should join the British Programme Council, but we actually now, I think, have a culture of polling transparency in Britain, which is really good here, which means you don't have as much of that slightly crazy, unskewed polling, although I felt really pleased because, oh, well, I've made that mistake, and Lord Ashcroft's made that mistake, which means I feel a lot better about mine. It can genuinely happen to anyone. But the number of emails I get every day, which goes, you've said this poll says this, but I've reweighted it. It's, oh, oh, God. But I think it's better than people can reweight it in their bedrooms than...
Was that from an El Barassi?
That was last week. Kieran, to round us off, what have you brought with you?
Well, I'm taking the slightly odd detour from Lord Ashcroft marginal polling to Jesus Christ, which should be quite interesting. I mean, I enjoyed some of YouGov do from time to time put out some polling that's a bit kooky and fun, which I assume was the objective of this. But there was some polling they put out recently on the public's views on what Jesus would think about certain policy areas. And actually, the public was pretty perceptive, not that we know necessarily, but in terms of what we were talking off air about this and, you know, being theologically aware. Generally speaking, the public thought, you know, he'd oppose the death penalty and be slightly, you know, less in favour of gay marriage than the general public, although that's a bit of a, that's something different, I guess. And generally in favour of looser limits on immigration, which I guess is a sort of Christian idea of, you know, being nice to people and that sort of thing. But some of the sub findings were great. I mean, we had 33% of UKIP voters saying that Jesus Christ would want either tougher or no immigration into the UK, which I thought was great. And actually 38% of the public thought that Jesus would be in favour of renationalising the railways, which I'm not, you know, I went to a Catholic lower school, but I don't remember any sort of Bible verses on that one, but that's quite interesting.
It is also quite interesting to see that increasingly in all of these slightly fun polls, so Comrades had their wonderful who'd play the party leaders in a movie, and everyone else plumped for Rowan Atkinson for Nigel Farage, and UKIP voters went for Sean Bean. then you are starting to see, and I don't mean this nastily, effectively, as if UKIP voters exist in a different reality to the rest of the population, which... you know, might suggest, you know, that there are limits to trying to squeeze that vote, or it might suggest that a different approach than policy offers is needed. But I think sometimes these sort of kooky questions kind of sort of perhaps, you know, they might just confirm our prejudices, but they also can perhaps confirm sort of our hunches sometimes.
That's all for this week. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Leo Barassi. I was joined by Kieran Pedley and Stephen Bosch from The Telegraph. Our music is Pollinate by Kirk Pearson, licensed under Creative Commons. Thank you very much for listening and goodbye.